And with that, let's get on to today's talk. Again, we have with us Stephanie Reif. She's the Sandpoint Association of Realtors Executive Director. Daniel Wall, the SAR President, and Fabiola Ferris, who is the President-elect. Thank you all for being here. And Stephanie, let's start out with you.
Okay.
The fog of morning here.
The foggy morning, yes.
But tell us a little, just briefly, a little bit about what the Sandpoint Association of Realtors is and does, and for folks that aren't familiar.
Okay. Well, the Selkirk Association of Realtors is a member organization, includes realtors, of course, licensees, real estate professionals, and affiliates and sponsors who support the real estate industry, home inspectors, title companies, lenders, so on and so forth. We also have the multiple listing service, which is a mechanism for real estate agents and brokers to, for lack of a better word, showcase their listings, their properties for sale to other members in hopes to help their clients achieve, you know, sale or purchase of a home or property. We're also very involved. I don't think a lot of people understand how involved our members and the association are in the community. We do a lot of partnering with other nonprofits for grants, like placemaking. We've been very involved with Kinixu Land Trust in Pine Street Woods. We helped Kinixu Land Trust with grants for the Rewild Kootenai School Project. We've also done a project, a smart growth project, with the city of Bonners Ferry a few years ago that helped them plan and put into place some mechanisms on the South Hill as far as walkability, bike trails, so on and so forth. We also have a grant program that we help local nonprofits, such as Community Cancer Center, the VFW, the Food Bank, all sorts of, you know, different programs. And
yeah, let's circle back on the charitable work of the association. And thanks for that. Well, let's, I think everybody would like to know, what's the status of the real estate market, and what do you see coming up for what is the big season, of course, is spring and summer. And I maybe Dino jump in on that.
Yeah, well, you know, and I also want to say about the association that, you know, we exist because we also want to support the members, but we also want to hold each other accountable to certain levels of professionalism and certain, you know, levels of integrity. And so, you know, we have a realtor's pledge that we say that we want to make sure that our work is full of integrity and when we're representing each other and when we're working with each other. And it also is, we want to stay educated. Like, that's one thing that really I find to be of utmost importance too, is the Selkirk Association of Realtors really cares that all of our members stay up to date and educated on a variety of different topics that have to do with real estate, because it's very complicated.
Well, you know what? That raises a question I had never before considered, and that is, are there realtors that don't join the association? I kind of assumed that if you're a realtor, you're going to join the association, but I imagine there are some that don't.
Well, I can speak to that.
Yes.
Realtor is a trademark term by the National Association of Realtors. So, yes, you can be a real estate licensee and not belong to the association. We do have a couple of members who do not hold, that belong to the MLS, the Multiple Listing Service, that are not realtors. So, yes, that is allowable. Those policies just recently changed in the last little bit, due to some other things at a national level. But yes, and I would like to echo what Dino said. We do really hold our members to a higher standard of professionalism and integrity. And thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
Because that's really important, because we represent, you know, a fair amount of our community. And if, you know, it just takes one bad actor. So
yeah,
we really like to make sure that our actors are all well-versed.
You know, every profession has, you know, good actors and bad actors, mm-hmm. but we want to really celebrate and uplift the people that are doing things the right way. And when you do belong to the Selkirk Association of Realtors, you're also a member of Idaho Realtors, and you're also a member of the National Association of Realtors. Mm-hmm. So there's all different layers on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the, you know, I really believe in the association and what we do. To educate and inform the public, too, about different things. But as far as the market right now, you know, I think people always feel like in a resort community that the you know, spring and summer are the times, the most active times. But I think we've really found that it's year-round here now because, I mean, Sandpoint is a beautiful place to live no matter what. And a lot of people feel like maybe there's less competition in the wintertime if you put your house on the market, and there's also maybe less competition of other buyers. I don't know. What do you think, Fabi?
This winter has been not so much of a winter, so it feels like we've had a very long spring. And with that being said, it's been busy, and everybody who usually takes their education and does their education at this point in time, we're just not available. And also with the education, I wanted to pipe in that also all this helps to bring the realtors up to the standard in which that you know you are entrusting that person with your highest dollar of, you know, of your home. No one is going to spend that much money in a lifetime than when they buy their home. And you are putting your trust and faith into the agents to help you make the right decisions, to do the inspections, to be your professional eyes, and to be your trusted advisor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's very true. I mean, I'd say, you know, I have to say that, you know, I've been I kind of did a pivot, career pivot, and I've been in real estate for 6 years now. And I really underestimated the altruistic nature of being in this position. You know, you're really helping, like Fabi said, it's such a big deal. And even people that are highly educated in other areas of life may not know much about real estate law and real estate. And you're helping people get into something, or you're helping people get out of something. And it's a big deal. So to be a trusted advisor is very important. And we all take that very seriously, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive some more into the market conditions. So how has the market been for the past year? And then, you know, what do you guys foresee coming up in the rest of this year? As, you know, there's a lot of factors at play. One being we're currently in a war. I can't even take guesses about this big kind of chaotic political situation we're in, how that is going to affect things.
I was just going to say, you know, everybody knows that there was a huge blip during COVID. I think nobody anticipated that, that people would say, hey, I can work from wherever, so why don't I live in a beautiful place? And so places like Sandpoint became really, really hot. 20 and 21, we've never seen anything like that.
No.
And it cooled off after that, but it's not going to go back to where it was in 2019, which is something good to be said. If you owned something before, you know, 2019 or before 2020, you have equity, you know, so that's the good news. And, you know, I think that the market has, you know, it cooled slightly, but it's still pretty hot, depending on what kind of house. I mean, maybe right. You can speak to some specific figures,
yeah,
Stephanie.
Yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. We've seen from a year ago, this time in March, the sales, the quality or quantity sold is up 13%. The dollar volume sold is up 9%. However, the average sales price and median price is down 3 to 8%. In the Sandpoint area, and we see the Hope and Clark Fork area actually jump up to 32% in units sold. And however, the average sales price in the Hope and Clark Fork area is down 17%. Bonners Ferry and Priest Lake area, we've seen a decrease in units sold of about 12% there. And this time last year, had a lot more vacant land sales. So we're down about 12% in the Sandpoint area, and overall in vacant land sales down about 8%. Commercial, same thing, you know, a lot of businesses not selling.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I mean, I still think, like the girl said, you know, this wasn't really much of a winter. So we are seeing a lot of activity still throughout the market. And it's
But it's interesting that the average sales price is down. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, people that are interested in affordability for the local workforce probably like that idea. People that are selling their homes, maybe they don't.
Right.
Is that really affected by maybe just a handful of sales of some really expensive lakefront properties that will end up driving up the average price, which is not really reflecting what the average price is for most buyers?
And that's a good point, Chris, and that is true. That is true. Mm-hmm.
You can skews have that anomaly. It skews it a bit. And also, you know, there's Schweitzer, which kind of is its own little market up there. And that has seen definite increases in the last, like, 2 years, I would say, or 3 years. And I like, you know, I don't know exactly why that is, but I think probably the Icon Pass has brought a lot of people here where they can come and ski, you know, at different areas all over the country. Their pass is good. And so we've gotten exposed to a lot more people in the wintertime. Schweitzer has.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed something the other day. I was driving out near the airport, and there's tons of new houses going in. Mm-hmm. These new buildings, how does that affect? It seems like there's more than there are people to build those new houses. How does the new construction affect current, you know, already existing homes that are trying to sell? Is there a strong competition, or how does that work? I mean, is that even an issue?
It creates options. And it's nice to have these options. There's a lot of people who want South Sandpoint because the old, the nostalgic, being able to walk into downtown. And then you have the newer builds, which are more modern and less upkeep, or maybe just turnkey for them because they're leaving where they're at. There will always be real estate sales due to death, divorce, diapers, diamonds, and I think there's one other one. But ever changing.
I haven't heard that either.
The 5 Ds. Yeah. And so just like any other market, I should say we are like any other market because of the lake and because of Schweitzer. We've had less people coming in to ski, and which has created, I think, a slowdown a little bit on some house sales up in Schweitzer. As for the lake sales, anything that comes up on the lake, we want to be by water. People want to be by water. It gets pretty much quickly gobbled up depending on the price point. So when we look at price points and affordability, there's more room right now for negotiation for buyers. So when they see a price point, I say it's a, you know, look at the price point, and yes, this is what the suggested like MSRP is of the home. And the agents have done a great job doing a comps and comparisons, but a lot of time the market's going to tell you what the value of your home is.
And I wonder if the interest rates, I'm not sure where they're at right now, but you assume they might be going down.
They have gone down, which helps.
Which helps, that was going to be my question. How does that affect the flow?
It does help quite a bit. It does, definitely, for sure. Especially for people who are looking for a family home that is under $600,000, I'd say.
Yeah, and sales in the 500,000 and below range are actually, pending sales are down about 7%. So, and
homes, you mean properties that sold below 500,000
right,
were down. But is that because there's less inventory of those kinds of homes?
It could be, because normally those houses move pretty quickly. I would say. Mm-hmm. And that's also, I think, created a lot of interest, too, in these outlying areas. I saw this happen in Telluride, Colorado, where when things got too expensive in the heart of Telluride, then these other areas outside started to thrive, just like, you know, Clark Fork or Priest River.
Or even,
you know,
even Kootenay.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Old Town has the
leaps and bounds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Old, yeah, and Ponderay.
A lot of new construction, lower price points. A little bit of a commute, but when you're getting more home for your dollar, driving an extra 20-30 minutes doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're on the road, there's a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
And we are seeing pending prices or pending sales in the $500,000 to $750,000 range actually went up 14%. Mm-hmm. So that's that. And to me, when I look at the MLS, that's where a lot of the listings are in that price range.
Yeah.
And so
for sure.
Well, we are seeing a lot of growth, certainly. And in fact, I saw a number in one of the recent stories that the city is expecting to grow to 16,000 by 2040.
Wow.
And, you know, we're maybe 10,000 now. The last
10,000, yeah.
The last census had us a little, like 9, I think. But that speaks to an interesting issue that has come up, and that is basically the within the city, the infill and the fact that the city has just recently decided to make some changes to allow a smaller lot sizes. And I wanted to get your guys' take on that. And do you see that as a positive thing to reduce the lot sizes, which allows for you know, obviously more homes in a smaller area, and how that might affect the market for people that are looking to buy a home.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as far as property owners, that gives them more flexibility for sure. So it's a positive thing, but in that regard, but it causes other issues, of course, that have to be dealt with, like parking and, you know, that kind of thing. They've created more density also in within the city with some of the zoning. Like there's a cottage zoning. There's a development that just went up right next to me, my house, kind of near City Hall. And there's 5 houses on one lot that used to have one house on it. And so they relaxed the zoning on that to be able to have somebody do that. And one of the justification behind that is because we need more housing. You know, so you know, I think that it's an issue though. There's a building going up in downtown right now where that is pretty controversial because there. But you know, on the one
hand,
are you
talking about 2 doors down from my office?
I think I'm talking about that. And but you know, then it's like, where are all those people going to park? And you know, all that. So there's issues. I think you have when you do these kind of things and you know. Change the zoning and the lots. You have to look at it holistically as far as what is the total impact going to be.
You know, I think one kind of rule of thumb is that it's better to have higher more density in the cities. That kind of helps combat sprawl out into our rural areas. And of course, we love our rural areas. It's a big attraction about being here. But it just changes the character of the town. I mean, we can see those apartments going up on Church Street. They have one up. A second one's coming, folks. People may not realize that. They're the same size. They have the foundation laid for that already. And they're both 4 stories. There's going to be a total of 89 living units in there with no parking provided.
Well, it's not just the parking that I question, but what about the city's infrastructure? What about, you know, we already have problems with the water and sewer, you know, and our streets and those kind of yummy things.
I do believe that the city council and the mayor, they're trying to deal with these things. Obviously, the city just, but I'm surprised at how it was, I think, was it 79% or over 80% of the people that live in Sandpoint voted to approve the bond for the wastewater treatment plant. It was an amazing amount of support considering that the effect of that is going to basically to double the cost for water and sewer in town.
I've already seen that on my bill. I know you probably have too.
But it was something that had to happen because our wastewater treatment plant is basically failing. The people did the responsible thing, but it's you know, it's gonna be a tough
It's a tough pill to swallow.
tough pill to swallow.
Just to interject for a second, one of the things I'm thinking about when you're talking is the idea build it and they will come. Or is it they're here and they need places to live? What is driving the influx of folks into our area? You're saying it's going to be up to 16,000 here eventually in the city of Sandpoint. Are these retirees? Are they people that can work remotely? Where are they working? What is the kind of the demographics? I'm sure the association has studied that quite a bit.
Well, I think it got kicked off, as Dino had mentioned, by the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people discovered at that time. I mean, mm-hmm. in my own work, over half my people now work remotely. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still living here. They just want to work out of their home, and that it, for the kind of business I have, which is, you know, media marketing, mm-hmm. It's okay for them to do that mm-hmm. as long as the productivity is not affected. Mm-hmm. But we also have people that I have trouble hiring people that can afford to the housing here based on what we can afford to pay, and so we have I think 5 people working remotely scattered around the country. Mm-hmm. And that same thing is happening here with our workforce, is increasingly people that can work remotely.
Yeah.
We saw Schweitzer step up and to, they have over 770 employees is what they had said at one meeting. So with 770 employees, where do you house them? And they're temporary, of course, seasonal. And so then they built those beautiful apartments behind Walmart, and there's another phase of that. There's actually another one coming also. And they subsidized those apartments with the hope that maybe those employees that are working for them go work for Idaho Club or Kavat, somebody else in during the summer and help subsidize that. So there are companies seeing that and needing that need. As for the on church, you know, it was written in the city code to help the business owners at one time to start the businesses and not have to worry about the parking. And so with that, you know, if we know what our rules and regulations are in the city, then somebody just used it to their benefit.
That's definitely what happened there. That particular rule was... they got rid of the requirement that you must provide off-street parking for your business, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago. Actually, when our mayor was the planning director at that time. Mm-hmm. But that was intended to help retail establishments and professional offices, not residential units that are going to load up, you know. There'll be more than 100 cars that are going to be needing to be parked when those things are mm-hmm. are completed and people are living there. And you know, where are they going to park? Well, the city has done some studies and they can say there's parking, you know, over by the hospital, or there's parking that's several blocks away and people will just have to walk to their cars.
But, with their groceries and their,
yeah. Yeah, well, that's not human nature, of course. Mm-hmm. You want to try to park as close as you can to where you're going.
Of course.
So anyways, that's a little bit of a different issue. Susie, tell us, are we? What are we doing?
We are 88.5 KRFY. We're your community radio station, and you're listening to The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We're talking with Stephanie Reif, and she's the Sandpoint Association Realtor Executive Director.
Selkirk.
Sorry. Did I say, well, that's
pronounced. We don't want our outlying communities to feel bad.
They're all inclusive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Dinah Wall, mm-hmm. She's president of the board right now, mm-hmm. and Fabiola Ferris, president-elect. Yeah. And we're talking all about our community housing and the support that Selkirk Association of Realtors brings to not only the realtors in our area, but folks that are looking for homes and things like that.
So I don't know if there's anything else that you guys want to mention on the city's decision to reduce lot sizes and requirements for homes. But there was another issue that came up, and that's going to affect the housing market, and that's regulation of short-term rentals in town. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting issue. We have, of course, short-term rentals we're talking about, basically people that have homes that they use for Airbnb or VRBO. And we've had limits on the number of those that could be in the city, but those limits have been removed now. How do you see that impacting the housing situation?
Well, the House and Senate passed this week the House Bill 583, which limits local cities and other entities' overreach and oversight on short-term rentals.
Yeah.
And we've seen that throughout the state. I think it was smart of the city to look at that again. But Dino, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it came out of a lawsuit from Lava Springs in Idaho, where they said that it wasn't legal for, you know, to put those limits on there. And I think the limit used to be, was it 35?
35 is what I remember.
And so it was really tough sometimes for someone, let's say somebody built this ADU and had a permit, they were one of the 35, and they, you know, then they wanted to sell the house. And one of the features of selling the house is, hey, I've got this great ADU that can be rented out. Well, that permit did not transfer with the property. So then, you know, you couldn't really use that as a selling feature. And if somebody bought it, they would be on a waiting list of like hundreds of people trying to get a permit. So in a way, you know, I think that it's going to be a good thing for property owners. I, as far as for the getting some flexibility and being able to afford to live in Sandpoint, if some of their income is going to come from that. But I also think that, you know, you don't want to see a community of empty houses that are just, you know,
short-term people,
you know, so there's an upside and downside to it, I think.
Well, and there's also safety issues,
yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that is part of the bill that it can't require if there are safety issues involved. And I think parking is a safety issue. And we were just driving this morning, trying to drop my daughter off at school. When you have cars parked on the streets in downtown Sandpoint and Florence and Lovina, and two cars on both sides, you can barely get through. And that's with just local people living there, and maybe the renter in their ADU. So if you are able to open up these short-term rentals, well, that's wonderful. A lot of people need extra income, however you want to paint that. But where are they going to park, and how's our wastewater going to handle all the big influx?
Well, and emergency services, too. That's my big concern, because I lived in a neighborhood where there were a couple of short-term rentals, and I think a couple of them... Well, there was three, and I think maybe one of them was legal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you'd get folks parking boats, other vehicles, and if there would have been an emergency on that street, could the fire truck get through? Could the ambulance get through due to, like Fabi was just saying, the parking? You know, that would be my concern. But it is nice, like Dino said, for that extra income, or have it be a selling feature.
Mm-hmm. Or even multi-generational, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kids that can't afford to come back here and live, you know. But if they, you know, could have a multi-generational type, you know, property with their parents or the grandparents or whatever, I think that's also something to be said for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to be clear on that, the city kind of has their handcuffed on this. Mm-hmm. This is something that's coming down from the state that we can't limit short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. But the impact on the housing market is the question. Mm-hmm. Just got a question in from a listener asking, I kind of related there with those two big apartments going up on Church Street. How does something like that affect the property values of nearby properties? Is that good for them or bad for them?
Wow, loaded question. Yes, I guess we're going to have to see. I really don't have a clear answer, because I have not personally seen this happen. And if you look at, well, let's throw out their Ponderay. They've been building townhomes, and they've been building apartments behind Walmart. I have not seen a decrease in the homes there. They're maintaining their with the market value of all the other homes. If you're looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, you know, and I
would say, I think Fabi's right. We don't know what the impact is going to be yet. Something like that can certainly increase value, but it can also, if there are negative impacts from it, then it would decrease your value.
Desirability.
Yeah.
Is the word, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that can be, you know, it can be the character of a neighborhood. It can be a view. It can be parking, you know, all these things can you know, negatively impact somebody's property value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wait and see.
Yes, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, but property values have certainly gone up, you know, here. I mean, if you look at, you know, over the last few decades or whatever, a rising tide floats all boats, too. It's like even homes that are older and need a lot of help have gone up in value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the maxims for investors is in real estate has always been, you know, buy in the path of development. Mm-hmm. But that can take years to come to fruition if you're buying in the path of development for that to actually increase your property value. So so wait and see on that one. We do want to save a little bit of time to talk about some of the charitable work that you guys do. But first, let's dive into another city issue, and because they're looking at some significant changes to the downtown zones. Specifically, we're talking about the commercial area. So, you know, right now we have a downtown core area. The city is proposing that there be created a kind of an inner downtown core and then a downtown outer core. That these zones would have ordinances that impact the way those are developed for commercial uses. And then there's also a historic overlay district that is specifically just really kind of along First Avenue and a little bit of Cedar Street where we have our most historic buildings, many of those going back over a century. I don't know if this came up before the association, and how what your take is on, you know, good idea, bad idea from your point of view as a realty association.
As the association, it's such a new development. There hasn't been a lot of talk about it that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. Maybe within the brokerages they've talked about it, but at a board level or an association, you know, the 30,000 foot view, we haven't had a chance to discuss it yet.
I think any protection of a historic area is positive, and I personally support that, because if you lose the character, you know, of your downtown core, of your historic core, then, you know, I think that is a negative for everyone. So I actually think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a couple of things are, and this is all still in the talking phase at this point. It's proposed. You got to take a look at ideas. You got to have ideas kind of on paper. It doesn't mean that they're going to be implemented. One of the ideas is that there be more availability to professional offices to have ground floor offices within that core. And we've had zoning that has said those need to be retail spaces. Professional offices can be second or third story. Mm-hmm. So that would allow more professional office space in the downtown core. But the other one that's probably one that people are going to want to debate is that current code allows for buildings to be up to 65 feet tall. And the proposed changes would lower that limit to 35 feet in that inner core area and 45 feet in the new outer core area. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of chatter that I've seen that, you know, these buildings that are taking advantage of the 65 foot limit are kind of out of character for the town. Yeah.
I would agree with that.
But I've heard the other part. If you want people to come in to invest, that you do need to build further up. And once you go past that 35 foot is where they start making their money. So, you know, I don't do commercial, but that was from a commercial agent. And we were just chatting, and I said, I hadn't thought of that. Because as you are developing, you know, there's a dollar per square foot. And if you're able to go up, and you have your buildings at one level, and you or your offices at the bottom level, and you move up and you're able to sell the top level as residential, it helps with the price of that building.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly a factor. I mean, look at New York City.
So yeah, yeah.
If you want to see it, take it to the extreme. Yeah. But I will mention that if you're interested in that issue, you could go to the Sandpoint Reader. They had a good story on it in their March 4th issue, and it has a map that shows these proposed downtown cores along with the discussion there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have just a few minutes left, but I know that the Selkirk Association of Realtors, they have a granting program, and tell us about that and maybe some of the folks that are, I'm presuming these are nonprofit organizations
yes.
that you grant to,
yes.
that you're going to be supporting.
Well, every year we have our Charitable Golf Tournament, which is our only fundraiser for our grants and scholarships program. And we hold that at the Idaho Club. We can have up to 32 teams, and historically we've sold out by the end of March.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and had waiting lists for that golf tournament. It's a lot of fun. Last year we didn't raise as much as we'd like, but in years past, I mean, we've raised probably over, gosh, $350,000 in the past 6 years to help support these programs. And each February, the grant applications come out. We have them on our website, or you can call the office or email the office to attain a grant. And we've done programs from like the Bonner Soil Conservation. They take out, is it third graders or fifth graders? I can't remember. I can't recall. But they have a program where they take them out and show them how to conserve water. And that's a great one. We've done Fill the Bowl with Zabriel Dillon. Her art students make ceramic bowls. And the fundraiser was just last week for the food bank.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of programs. We've also had folks come forward like the Hesters and other logging companies. Have helped donate firewood to the veterans, you know, just by hearing about our programs. So,
and the support for the arts too has been really significant. I have to say, you know, Pondre Arts Council has been supported and other local arts organizations by these grants. And I think one of the things that is important is that all of these organizations enhance the community. And the reason people come want to live in a place like this, like I was attracted because of the arts community here. And so people who are coming to, you know, move here to buy a home here or who already live here, you know, their lives are enhanced by these nonprofit organizations. And I think the association recognizes that and wants to support our Sandpoint way of life, you know, the reason we all love being here.
Yep.
Well, also, but we also support up in Bonner's Ferry and Priest River. So we're not just
Clark,
exclusive
Fork, and Hope,
for here.
That's true.
Yeah,
because the Selkirk Association of Realtors is for the two northern counties, basically, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep, and one of the focuses that I really enjoy is the association and its members, one of the big focuses is helping children. So, you know, Food for Our Children, the Music Conservatory, the Teen Center.
The Financial Fair. Just the other week at the high school, we were able to spend 4 hours with the seniors who are graduating and give them a little sample of life and a job and food and paying rent.
Financial literacy.
So that's also a big one. And we have a lot of members who volunteer as coaches, all sorts of, you know, different programs throughout the community. So
is your grant cycle for this year closed?
No.
You can still apply?
Yep.
If you're a nonprofit organization?
Yes. Yeah. The deadline for the application's deadline, excuse me, that rolled out wrong, is April 17th.
Okay.
So, and it's a simple
I wonder if something like a local community radio station might qualify.
You know, I actually talked to your station manager about that.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, I think we have time for one more question. So you mentioned there are lending programs available. Tell us about what those are.
There is a variety.
There are. One thing that I've been really excited about is helping first-time home buyers.
And there are a lot of programs for first-time homebuyers where they don't necessarily, I mean, they have to know that they can afford the payment, but they don't have to come up with a down payment, a large down payment. And that is huge for people who are just, you know, getting started in the home ownership, lane.
Journey.
Yep. Yes, journey. And so I've really appreciated knowing about a lot of those programs. There's also programs that can help people step up into a new home and buy a home that they find that they really love before they sell their other home. And it's kind of like a bridge between those two things because you can't always time that perfectly. Mm-hmm. So those are two loan products that I really feel help people.
And one program that a lot of folks don't know about is, or one aspect of lending is VA loans are assumable. Mm-hmm. And assumable loans are a great way for those who might not have a big down payment to get into a home.
And those loans could be really low interest rates
as
well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Because we had some great interest rates up to just a few years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And there still can be a good interest rates depending if you want to buy down your points. Every bank and every lender outside of the banks, they have so many different products, especially they're always trying to get the market back into getting a loan, if it's refinancing or buying land, house, second home. Just talk to your lenders, go to your different, everybody has a different product, and don't stop at just one place, shop them out.
And how do people find out more about these specific types of loan programs?
They can call different banks and they just ask them, what, you know, I'm looking to buy a home, I'm a new homeowner, or I'm a veteran. A lot of people have gotten, will go the easy route in which they just click on the internet and they're going to these internet clicking. But your local lenders are going to be your best options because they know the area and they're going to be able to also help you with the different, we'll say, different challenges that the Bonner and Boundary County offer.
And it's, you know, one thing is to go directly to the bank, to banks who do home mortgages or even land mortgages. But the other thing is there also are mortgage companies that they shop it around on a national level. And there are several of those here in Sandpoint, too.
Mortgage lenders and mortgage brokers.
Brokers. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so they're going to, you know, be able to compare things and often have really innovative products, too. So I would say, like Fabi said, shop it around because sometimes the bank is the best deal, and then sometimes, you know, the mortgage companies are going to find you the best deal depending on who you are as a buyer, if you're more traditional or not so traditional.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything you guys would like to throw in as a last? Susie, you
well,
have
I was
one.
Just thinking we're talking about getting a hold of you folks. Do you have, and you must have a website, Selkirk Association of Realtors. Is it just that?
That's SelkirkAOR.com.
Okay. That's how you can, if you want to apply for a grant or you want to just find out more about our market situation.
And the office is located right next to the radio station, the other radio station, the Blue Sky.
On Marion Street?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's on Marion. And so people are welcome anytime to come on in, say hi to Stephanie and Danielle. We have an amazing staff, by the way. We're really lucky, you know, because I just have to toot her horn a little bit because, you know, all these associations exist all over the country and all over the state. And the executive directors, the AE, the administrative executive, and she was just on a panel at the state convention. And I was just amazed at how much knowledge she has and how communicative she is to all of us about what's going on in the real estate world. So we're lucky to have Stephanie as our executive.
And for as Selkirk Association, we trailblazing. We are doing a lot of things in which the rest of the state are looking at us. What are we going to do next with all the challenges that have come up with the real estate? And Stephanie has been in the forefront, and they call her and ask her. And we just have to give a high praise to when you have great management.
Yeah,
you have great
true.
People.
And we're one of the smaller associations. I think we have how many members now? 320?
305.
Okay, 305. And like, you know, whereas like the Coeur d'Alene Association has like, what, 1,500 or something?
They're up to 2,000.
Oh, 2,000.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks you guys for that, but it was unnecessary.
Sorry, you got to take it,
Stephanie. Yeah, you got to take it. I mean, with how much has been going on in real estate on the national level and everything like that, it's been really important for all of us to stay up to date and informed on all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's always different things popping up. Well, Stephanie Reif, the executive director of the Selkirk Association of Realtors, Dinah Wall, the current president, and Fabiola Ferris, the president-elect, thank you. All three for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
But yeah, it's been really interesting to hear all about it. We have a wonderful community, and we have a wonderful community radio station, which is a rare thing in a small community. Mm-hmm. So we're here for you guys, too. We want to remind you that this interview will be on our website as a podcast later on in the day. That's KRFY.org. And with that, we could go out with a song. How about that?
Yeah, what do you got for us, Susie?
Well, let's see. I have.